It's Bears Week, and we're getting ready for Julius Peppers' return to Chicago, and yet still trying to relax, per the advice of Aaron Rodgers. Joining us to talk about the state of the Green Bay Packers is Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. We'll talk to him next. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden, along with Alex Talich. We're talking some Packers football. Like I said, we're getting ready for a Bears game, recapping a loss to the Lions with Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, how you doing this morning?
Brian, I'm doing well. How was your vacation?
Very good. Thanks for asking, and it's good to have you back on the show after a little hiatus. But let's get into this here. A lot of attention on quarterback Aaron Rodgers right now for the Green Bay Packers. What I want to know, Nathan, is have we ever seen a worse three-game stretch from Aaron Rodgers in the past?
Yeah, we have seen worse three-game stretches out of him. You only need to go as far back as last year. His last three games there, if you don't want to count the game where he was hurt from week three to week six last year, he also went through a rough patch then. By our numbers, he did very good against the Jets, and then he was simply average against the Seahawks and Lions, which, of course, we're used to better out of Rodgers, but still playing average at quarterbacks, still a decent thing. His numbers look worse than they actually are. He has 10 of his receivers have dropped passes so far, which is third most in the league. He's also had four passes, which were thrown away, which is top 10 in that category. So that's a lot of passes right there that either weren't intended to be complete or were not complete, but it wasn't his fault, that are making his numbers look a lot worse than they actually are. So we have seen worse out of Rodgers, but we've also definitely seen better.
I think you hit the nail on the head, Nathan. I don't mean to intimate that Aaron Rodgers is, you know, doing poorly by any stretch of the imagination. It just seems like he's doing average, and we've seen so much better out of him for the majority of his career. Where does Aaron Rodgers stack up against other NFL quarterbacks so far this season?
At the moment, by our PFF ratings, we have him as the fourth best quarterback. It's really been a weird year for quarterbacks so far. Not just Rodgers, but Manning, Brady, and Breeze all have very similar games to Rodgers as well, where they had week one that wasn't anywhere close to what we're used to seeing. Week two was what we're more used to seeing out of all four quarterbacks. And then week three, all four of them regressed again. So those are the four we're typically used to seeing as the top four quarterbacks, but none of them are playing as well as we're used to. Russell Wilson, someone else who really hasn't played as well as he was during the preseason or last season. So Rodgers still ranks highly, as it's been a weird year for quarterbacks so far.
There you go, folks. Despite Aaron Rodgers' relative struggles, still a top four quarterback in the NFL. Nathan, do Eddie Lacy's early struggles lie more with him or with the blocking in front of him?
I would say it's more has to do with the blocking in front of him. The Packers haven't always gotten great run blocking out of their offensive tackles, but this year the guards haven't been playing as well as they're used to as well. In two of the three games, we have given Josh Sitton a negative run block grade, which we only did four times all of last season. TJ Lang mostly struggled against Seattle, but he hasn't been his usual self in terms of run blocking these last few games. The line has still been decent in pass blocking. But one stat to show that it's a little more on the blocking is that Lacy on average has been contacted just 0.7 yards after the line of scrimmage. So basically if he gets a yard away, he's already being contacted by the defense. where he's still averaging 2.5 yards after contact per carry, which is even more than last year. And then Lacy still has had 11 players miss tackles on him, which is high. And so I'm blaming it more on the blocking than Lacy. But also, to be fair, the Packers have faced three very good defensive lines back to back to back.
As we work our way through the offense here, Nathan, are Packers receivers not named Jordy Nelson really playing as poorly as they appear to be?
I would say they are. Randall Cobb hasn't played too poorly, but similar to Rodgers, we just simply expect a lot better out of him. He's dropped two passes against Detroit, and really he hasn't been doing much after contact. He has 2.6 yards after contact per catch this year, compared to 5.8 yards after contact per catch last year. So that number is really down compared. Boykin's been the bigger disappointment so far. He just has two catches and he also has two drops. So anytime you have as many drops as catches, that's never a good thing. And then Adams, he's caught seven passes so far, but outside of the 24-yard catch against the Jets, he hasn't done too much with his catches. But since he has fewer than 100 snaps of NFL experience, he gets more of a pass than Boykin and Cobb do.
What has happened to the promise of Richard Rodgers that he showed in the preseason? And not that I was ever expecting him to be a Pro Bowler, but it just seemed that, wow, for being a rookie, I thought he showed, fairly decent in the preseason, but he's just been absent since the regular season has started.
First, in terms of his run blocking, he wasn't all that great at that in the preseason, and that's carried on to the regular season. We gave him a negative 1.8 run block grade in the preseason and negative 3.9 grade in the regular season. So if you see his grade on this site, why it's negative is mostly his run blocking. In terms of receiving, his only statistic is one target, which he didn't catch. So it's not so much he's been dropping passes or hasn't done much after the catch. He simply hasn't been getting thrown the ball. So I don't have a great answer for why he's not, other than if I had the choice of throwing to Jordy Nelson or Richard Rodgers, I would be throwing it to Jordy too. So.
I tend to agree there. I guess you'd just think he would have a few catches here and there. We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Switching our attention to the defensive side of the football, Nathan, a lot of attention on Julius Peppers this week. It'll be his return to Chicago for the first time since leaving via free agency. Now, I know Julius Peppers has done well so far, but is he living up to the $26 million contract the Packers gave him?
I would say over 3 games, if he keeps that up over the next 13 games, then he would be living up to that contract in the first year of the contract at least. He's done a great job pass rushing so far, a sack, 4 hits, and 6 hurries, which puts him at 11 pressures, which is tied for the fourth most among 3-4 outside linebackers. He had a batted pass, which helps his pass rushing as well. He has 2 stops against the run, which has led to basically average play against the run so far, which we've seen Peppers play excellently against the run in the past. We've seen him play a bit worse against the run than this. So this is about average amongst his past play there. He's gone into coverage so far, not there, but he does have a pass defended, so he looks good in coverage on a very small sample size as well. So I would say at this point, he and Mike Daniels are fighting over the defensive MVP so far of the team.
That's the good news for the Packers. Speaking of living up to contracts, how about Sam Shields' early season performance and the $39 million the Packers signed him to?
He hasn't quite lived up to that so far. He has looked pretty good in these first 2 games, had a pass defended in each game. Allowed 50% of the passes thrown his way to be caught, which is a good number, and then allowed less than 40 yards in each of those games. Against Lions, the numbers don't look great. He allowed all 6 passes thrown his way to be caught for 106 yards, but he was never really too lost in coverage there. While we graded him negatively a few times, there was never any huge negative grade there. And then he did have a tackle for a short gain, which after allowing a catch, which in the right situations is still a positive for the defense. So that was a good play out of Shields there against the Lions. So overall, it's been good play. Maybe not enough to live up to that contract, but still could be a lot worse there.
How much do you think the Packers miss Clay Matthews when he was off the field late in that Lions game in the fourth quarter?
In general, whenever Matthews is out, the Packers will, of course, miss them or miss him. It meant more Nick Perry, which he's only been in for 21 pass rushes this season, but he has yet to come up with a single pressure. It also limited what the Packers could do a little bit there. The Packers early in the game and in the past few games, they've liked using Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, and Mike Neal all on the field on the same time to rush. But once Matthews was out, we only ever saw two of the three players of Peppers, Neal, and Perry. So I'm not sure if that was simply because it was the fourth quarter or because they didn't want all three on the field at the same time. But in this specific instance, once Matthews was out, the Lions were already more trying to run the ball to run out the clock, and Matthews hasn't been great against the run this year. So I think in this particular case, they didn't miss Matthews a ton. But in general, whenever he's out, it's not a good thing for the Packers.
All right, Nathan, the Packers take on the Bears this upcoming Sunday. What's the lowdown on the Monsters of the Midway?
The Bears on offense have been playing fairly well so far. They, of course, have the two great receivers, Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey, who they've been a little banged up this year, but have still put up decent numbers. Even though they've had injuries to the offensive line, which didn't happen last year, their replacements on the offensive line have played very well. But where their real weakness is on defense. At safety, the Bears had about as much struggles as the Packers did last year. And this year, in their past game, they lost all three of their top safeties and were down to their fourth and fifth on the depth chart at one point. They've already lost Charles Tillman for the season. So they've already gotten fairly hurt in the secondary, which the Packers can hopefully take advantage of. They have upgraded a bit at defensive end with Willie Young, Jared Allen, and Lamar Houston. So the Packers' offensive tackles will really be put to a test in this one. But the middle of the Bears' defense isn't all that great. So if the Packers are going to turn around the run game, this is probably the game that they can do it in.
Well, I hope that's the case. Nathan, thank you so much for joining us here at Railbird Central. We'll talk to you again next week and recap the Bears game.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right, take care. Once again, Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us here at Railbird Central's Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. We're talking about the Packers getting ready for the Bears on Sunday. I think the big news yesterday that has hit outside just the Green Bay area in the state of Wisconsin, saw it on the Mike and Mike show on ESPN Radio, televised on ESPN2 this morning, talking about Aaron Rodgers and his comments on his weekly radio show yesterday on the ESPN Radio affiliate in Milwaukee. Aaron Rodgers telling Packers fans to relax, relax. They have a 1-2 start. Aaron Rodgers isn't playing lights out football, and he's telling fans to relax. And you know what? I do think he's right temporarily. I think fans tend to overreact. They see the losing record. They see Aaron Rodgers not playing up to his usual self that fans have become used to seeing over the years. And they're worried. They're worried the Packers are going to continue their losing ways, miss out on the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers is going to regress, et cetera, et cetera. And you know what? It's such a small sample size that it is overreaction thus far in the season. The Packers have faced three pretty good defenses. Obviously, Seattle Seahawks, arguably the best defense in the entire NFL. just the Lions team they played last week. I'm not sure about the entire defense, but of course their defensive line up front, led by Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley, makes up for a lot of flaws elsewhere on the team. Even the Jets, whose offense might be an embarrassment, their defense is the relative strength of the team. The Packers, I think, will get better. I think they'll learn from the lessons that they learned in the first three games of the year. And I think they will get better. All that being said, I think, you know, the Packers fans should only relax temporarily. Push is coming to shove here pretty soon, because, you know, with the Packers going on the road in week four to Chicago, not an easy place to play against, not an easy team. Boy, if the Packers start 1-3, then the fan base is going to get more vocal. They're going to become more skeptical. They're going to have less patience for the quarterback telling them to relax. It would certainly, if, and I know this is a big if, but if the Packers were to lose, and I'm getting ahead of myself here, but that's what we do in the media, I suppose. I'm allowed to do it. Packers probably shouldn't do it. But should the Packers lose on Sunday to the Bears, they're facing maybe a must-win game against the Minnesota Vikings the following week. Another division game. Third of three consecutive division games. Boy, you start 1-4, and you know, including 0-3 in the division, you're setting yourself up for missing out on the playoffs. So, yeah, I do think that a 1-2 start to the season is far from it's far from over. You know, there's a lot of time for the Packers to turn things around. I think they will turn things around. I think you've started to see the defense start to turn things around. And now it's the offense that's got to get on track. And I just think, there's been a lot of change on the offensive side of the football, especially in terms of the passing game. Just gone from last year, our JerMichael Finley and James Jones, not to mention, the ultra-reliable targets of Donald Driver and Greg Jennings prior to that. I think there's been a lot of turnover there. And just the more time that passes, the Packers are going to figure things out. The wide receivers, Jarrett Boykin, Davante Adams, those guys are only going to get better. They're going to figure out how teams are attacking them and how to attack defenses. I think they learned their lesson a little bit against the Lions that, they got to figure out ways to attack this cover two looks, and they didn't do it. They didn't do it against Detroit. And I understand that, the Lions were basically playing with a six-man front, keeping two safeties back, which is basically inviting the Packers to run, and they didn't. And that does fall on the shoulders, as Nathan Yonke said, of the offensive line. Really poor showing by the interior of the Packers' offensive line. Especially Josh Sitton and TJ Lang, two guys who are veterans, who you expect to do the job out there. You expect those guys to be good. I've been, I wrote this in my humor satire column, What's Really Grinding My Gears. I've been telling people left and right that Josh Sitton and TJ Lang are one of the best pair of guards in the entire NFL. Well, I hope anybody who was listening wasn't watching the Lions game, because they got owned this past Sunday. They really did, and Corey Linsley didn't look that good either. Add it all up, and I think a lot of teams are going to struggle with Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley. But I mean, that isn't to say you have to grade out as the best. When ProFootballFocus.com doesn't have to give you the best grade in the entire NFL, you just have to more or less try to figure out a way to neutralize these guys You don't have to pancake them. You got to just figure out a way to neutralize them and do more than as Nathan Jahnke said, more than, Eddie Lacy's getting contact from the defense less than a yard away from the line of scrimmage. I mean, when that happens, you're not going to have much success in the run game. No doubt about it. So the Packers got to figure out ways, and they got to do better up front. They got to do better up front to get this run game going. I have been a little bit surprised at the lack of playing time from John Kuhn. I thought the Packers, we would be seeing more of him. Why aren't they using the fullback, the traditional fullback, more in the run game? Boy, I sure would like to see him blocking more often for Eddie Lacy than we have. John Kuhn played 3 snaps against the Detroit Lions. I'd like to see him blocking for Eddie Lacy. Just another guy who's maybe a little bit better blocking option than having an extra tight end in the game. Something like that. Anyway, Packers got to figure things out on the offensive side of the football. This week, as we get ready for the game against the Chicago Bears on Sunday, I think, of course, there's a lot of attention on Julius Peppers' return to Chicago for the first time since he's left as a free agent. First time he's playing a game there, at least. I don't know if he's traveled up by himself back to Chicago or not. Julius Peppers going to face his former teammates. And Julius Peppers getting out to a very good start this season. I think the official NFL statistics had down Julius Peppers for 3 quarterback hits this past week on Matthew Stafford, part of a very good job the Packers did of pressuring the Detroit Lions quarterback. And then I read the article by Bob McGinn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who keeps his own statistics and had Julius Peppers down for 6 hurries himself. 6 hurries, pressuring Matthew Stafford, probably forcing him to do something, he wouldn't normally do, whereas he'd just sit back in the pocket. He may not get to the quarterback every play, but you're either flushing him out or you're hurrying a throw or things like that. And that's really good news to see Julius Peppers have a big impact at 34 years old on this Packers defense. Now, what we have to see this week, and it starts today, I think Julius Peppers is a better player. The Green Bay Packers defense is better when Clay Matthews is opposite Julius Peppers, or they're just on the field at the same time. I think Clay Matthews takes pressure off Julius Peppers, and yet we saw this past Sunday Clay Matthews exit the game with a groin injury in the fourth quarter, never return. And we don't really know the severity of the injury right now. Now, as we mentioned, talked about on the show on Monday here at Railbird Central, it's a concern. Obviously, we've seen Clay Matthews miss a fair amount of time with multiple hamstring injuries, a broken thumb. Now it's a groin. There's always something seems to be wrong with Clay Matthews. And it's only gotten worse the past 3 seasons here. Early in his career, about the first 3 years of Clay Matthews' career, he would play through these hamstring issues, or they would appear in training camp and kind of go away during the regular season. But then, in 2012, what did he miss? Like 4 games to a hamstring injury. Last year, he missed a game to a hamstring injury, and then like 4 more with the broken thumb. And of course, I'm more, there's less concern with the broken thumb. I mean, obviously, that's, a broken bone rather than these fatigue injuries like hamstrings and groins. And now it's something new. Now it's a groin injury. And we don't really know the severity. I know they talked to Clay Matthews in the locker room on Monday, the day after the injury, and he didn't really have much of an update. He's just kind of like, wait and see, more or less. So today, as the show is recorded, it's Wednesday. It's the first day of practice of the week as the Packers get ready to take on the Bears, and kind of waiting to see the status of Clay Matthews. Is he going to practice at all? Or is he going to practice in a limited fashion? Or was it so minor? I mean, it's not like he was carted off the field. He's able to walk off under his own power. I mean, would it be all that surprising if he was able to return full today? Maybe that's a long shot, returning full practice on the first day of the week. But still, I mean, we're waiting to see how severe this thing is. I mean, if he doesn't practice at all today, then maybe there's a little bit more room for concern. Maybe he doesn't even play against the Chicago Bears. But if he's at least out there practicing on maybe a limited basis, they cut his snap count back a little bit. Well, at least then you're encouraged, like, oh, he's only going to get better as the week goes along, and there's still 2 more days of practice left this week in which he could still practice full. That gets you feeling a little bit better for his prognosis for Sunday's game. As like I said, I mean the obviously Packers are a better team when he's out there. Whether he's taking pressure off Julius Peppers or not, Packers are a better team when Clay Matthews is on the field. So we're waiting to see what he'll be like. Other injuries impacting the team right now. Devon House suffered a knee injury, kind of a little bit of a different situation. If you were watching the game on Sunday, at first Devon House exited the game, and Devon House played very well, by the way, at least in pass coverage. Ended up having a couple missed tackles and run support that really didn't help. But I mean, coming from the secondary, I'd rather see a cornerback missing tackles than a linebacker or a defensive lineman. Devon House doing a very good job against Calvin Johnson and helping to shut down the Lions passing game. But still, you saw Devon House temporarily exit the game due to cramps, ends up coming back, and then exits the game again with a knee injury. Kind of waiting to find out what the status is of Devon House, whether this knee injury is something to be concerned about. Again, wasn't a guy who was carted off the field, was able to walk off under his own power, so gives you maybe a little bit of hope that it's not really anything that's going to keep him out a long time at least. But still, waiting to see where he's at, along with Brad Jones, who's missed the past 2 games with a quad injury, even though maybe Brad Jones' time is over as a starting linebacker. I still think the Packers would be a better football team if he was out there at least as a backup. Better with him than without him, at least something along those lines. So, waiting to see how things shake out on the injury front here on the first day of practice of the week as the Packers get ready for this all-important game just 4 days away on Sunday against the Chicago Bears. The second of 3 straight games within the NFC North division. Packers wanting to avoid a start that puts them at 1-3 on the season, and so do the fans, obviously. So excited to see how it all plays out. Mike McCarthy will talk at 1:30 p.m. today, his press conference. So we'll hopefully have some updates there for you at Cheesehead TV or following our Twitter feeds or whatever. But that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central here at Cheesehead TV. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. We'll be back again on Friday. Until then, on behalf of Jamie Snowden, Alex Talich, and everybody else here at Cheesehead TV, we'll see you later. I'm Brian Kiriwu. I leave you with a song today called Nemo by Humphreys McGee on Psi Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.